Today's podcast is a conversation with Tutti for the super achievers among us. Tutti was a design leader in tech corporations from startups to Facebook. And 3 years ago, she left her job to follow her passion for personal development using the design process. She's a high achiever and climbed the ladder all the way up to a high function at Facebook. She was often overwhelmed and anxious, though. And I think some of you might feel that way too at times. In this podcast, we talk about how to deal with this, but also how to free yourself from the cult of achievement. Because very often, it's when you stop looking for success that you become truly successful and unlock unlimited potential. And this podcast reminded me of the top 5 regrets of the dying. A palliative care nurse wrote that book. And I think it's important for you to hear these 5 regrets and reflect on it. The first one is, I wish I'd had the courage to live a life true to myself and not the life others expected from me. Number 2, I wish I hadn't worked so hard. 3, I wish I had the courage to express my feelings. 4th regret, I wish I had stayed in touch with my friends. And the last one, I wish that I had let myself be happier. If hearing this touched you, be sure to listen to this episode. And also listen if you are a super achiever. I'm Muriel, CEO, mum and educator. I used to work really hard and sacrificed important things to me until I lost my motivation. Fast forward past many failed attempts and lessons learned, and I found a way to reach great results while working less. Today, I'm obsessed with helping other leaders build meaningful lives. So each week, I'll be sharing inspiration to change your life and organization. This is Rebel Leader with a Heart. Hi, Tutti. Nice to meet you.
Hi, Muriel. So glad to be on the show.
Yeah, so great to have you. It's such a long distance between the both of us. Where are you from?
I'm in San Francisco. It's early morning for me.
Yeah, and I'm in Brussels and it's here late. It's already dark outside. So,
Well, there's something beautiful about that, the connection on different parts of the world, the starting and the ending of the day. It's lovely.
Yeah, great. So can you maybe briefly explain who you are and your career path?
Yeah, happy to do that. So I have been a design leader in corporate for 22 years, worked at design firms that figure out the future of connected televisions, autonomous vehicles, universal households, all of that. And I've also worked at startups, Series A and B funded startups, and also in large tech corporations. My last corporate job was at Facebook, where I ran teams working on ad products and new video products. And about 3 years ago, I left the corporate world because I wanted to follow a little bit more of my passion for people, personal development, learning, leadership, and also an entrepreneurial streak that I've always had. So now I coach people. I help leaders figure out how to be their authentic selves using the design process, because that's what I know. I speak, I'm an author. That's a little bit of where I've been and where I come to now.
Wonderful, wonderful. And then I read somewhere that you are a super achiever. You climbed the ladder and you had a high function at Facebook. But at some point, you had achieved most of what you wanted, but you felt anxious and overwhelmed. Why do you think is that? Because I think a lot of our listeners are like you, high achievers, but now feeling also a bit overwhelmed.
No, absolutely. And if I go back a little bit, because I am Thai Chinese. And since I was a little girl, I grew up with a tiger mom, a very fierce Asian tiger mom. And she had expectations filled with love and intention, but she very much had expectations to achieve the grades, achieve the best grades, an A, if not an A plus. Keep going. You know, when I was in high school, I did a full international baccalaureate program to get that diploma. But I also did all the AP advanced placement classes because I was, you know, a little bit of an immigrant, a third culture kid between worlds. So instead of one or the other, it's let's achieve in both. Let's do all of everything, applying to all the best universities. And then when I graduated, the path as projected on me, and which I internalized from my mother and from the world around, is that, hey, to be successful, you work for these companies, you work for these big name companies. And when you're there, there is a performance review system, there is an achievement system, there's the next rung of the ladder. Oh, okay, you want that promotion, you want that raise. Oh, you see that, okay, the path forward is you need to become a manager. All right, now I want to manage people. The goal is to how close can you get to the CEO? How many steps removed from the CEO are you? And I think that that is a vision and a dream that was given to me first by my mother and then by essentially the culture, the tech culture around
society,
me.
Society.
Exactly. And I was raised to be a good Asian girl. And that's what I did for a long time. It kept going and kept doing that. But and 22 years, that's a really, really long time to do this, Muriel. And of course, along the way, there were a lot of other things, you know, got married, I had children, I, you know, had a house in San Francisco. All of these are really big things. But I think you shift a lot over your period of time. And I think when I wasn't quite sure what I wanted to do, this was a really great anchor to have. You know, to be like, all right, if I don't know, then I'll try this. But what I realized essentially on the back of three large crises in my life, I think in challenge is where we often grow the most, yeah, was where I realized this wasn't what I wanted to do. And so in the period of a year, my father-in-law, who I had known since I was 18, he passed away. He was my American father, so felt really like a father without the complexities of growing up with him. And in that same year, a couple of months later, my kid's dad left the house and we separated, headed to divorce with elementary school age kids. And then finally, in the tail end of that same year, my father passed, who lived in Thailand. And when all of these things happened, it really helped peel back the armor, peel back just the layers of what had been driving me to go, 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 and kind of forced me to look inside to be like, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? What has been the goal of working 50, 60, 70, 80 hour weeks for this entire time? Is that all that matters? These are things that you have been doing to get accomplishments for all of these companies you've been working for. I was doing a 3-hour commute, and part of it was it didn't feel good. Even before these three big things, it didn't feel good. There was always the sense of, oh my gosh, how do I get the next thing? How do I get the next thing? The anxiety, the overwhelm, the running, and then the continual pressure. And sometimes it felt good, but after year after year after year, it was, it felt like the walls were starting to close in and it was starting to get very anxious and overbearing. And essentially the three crises really got me to a point where I'm like, something really needs to change. And so I left my job at Facebook.
Yeah. And would you say then that you mostly felt anxious and overwhelmed because you were following the wrong path? Was it mainly that, or was it also the hard work, or what was it?
I think that initially it was the right path because I didn't know any better. And if you don't know, why not experiment and see what this is like? I think it really got down to remaining stuck on that same unchanging path for so long. And after a period of time, it's too much. And the other analogy I use is that it wasn't balanced or integrated. It was very much 100% career, 98% career and work focused, because I did have two young children. But that was what was taking all the energy and time. And there was a period when it was invigorating. And then I had realized that it had been a long time since it had been invigorating, probably 10, 12 years. So I think it's a mixture of the past changing and my not realizing it, or me changing and realizing that this wasn't the right path.
Yeah.
And that combined with just the extremeness of this above all else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what I notice now is that a lot of people are in that position now, especially since the pandemic, which created that crisis, but worldwide, probably combined with personal moments as well. So a lot of people are really there. But then you did the switch. So doing the switch from this corporate career to starting your own company, and with that, like you call it, cult of achievement, how did you manage to free yourself from it?
So Maria, let me tell you something that's very, very ironic. You know, in the beginning, because I'm a person who likes new things, is drawn to the next, which is a good trait as a designer when you're looking for new concepts. So I think for the first maybe couple of months, it was really exciting. And I think whenever you start something new, whether it's your own company or a new job, the first 3 to 6 months, you don't really know. So you kind of just keep going and you try new things and you're the new person and you have some imposter syndrome, and this is all very normal. What I noticed is once I settled into a rhythm, about 6-9 months after that initial period, there was a day where I met a friend who I hadn't met for a long time. And he was saying, oh my gosh, now that you have such freedom running your own business, surely you are out surfing every day and enjoying life and doing all this. And I looked at him and I'm like, no, I can't surf. I have clients who are in Europe. I've got to be up very early to talk to them. And in that moment, we both started laughing because I had left my corporate job to get more balance and freedom. And ironically, 9 to 12 months later, I was doing the same thing to myself. I thought, okay, I'm leaving that cult of achievement. I'm leaving the corporate world. That's what made me like this. But no, it was me. It was me. And the lucky thing is, I've always known it was there, but that particular moment, seeing that come up, was like, all right, I'm beholden to no one else but myself. So it's easier for me to shift this because I have the system. The system is not a corporation. The system is me and everything else. And again, it's about the balance. It's realizing when it's one versus the other and being pretty intentional with your calendar and carving out the things that you say are the most important first, trying to put the big rocks in there because the urgent is always going to come up.
Yeah. And the habits of working hard and of being successful, they're always there. And I don't know about you, but I tend to compare myself with the best.
Absolutely.
And then you think, I'm nowhere. And then when I compare myself to the purpose, then I think, but I know I have this life that I had designed. So why do I still have that need to be even more successful? It's really for the outside world and not for yourself often.
Yeah. One of the things that I love doing for myself and also for my clients is unpacking what success is and unpacking it from a sense of who is this for? You know, which parts of this success is for you? Which parts of this success is for your parents? Which parts are for your children or for your friends or for your relatives? And which part is for a bigger they? Mm-hmm. And the they could be, for some people, it could be very spiritual, for you know, a god or something else. For other people, it could be for ancestors. And then for other people, it's for society.
Or the customers, because if they don't yep. think I'm that successful, then...
Yeah. So that's all, I think, the layers of who is this for? And, you know, I don't think there's a right answer or a wrong answer, but it's simply opening up the perspectives to be like, all right, maybe it's not one thing and maybe it can change over time. Maybe this month it's one thing. Maybe it's going to change into something else next month.
Yeah. And I believe we need to make that exercise regularly because, because then you reach a certain stage in your business and you have to ask yourself that question again and again, very regularly, because the answer changes.
Mm-hmm. And that, to be honest, is what I think is one of the beautiful gifts of the pandemic. It's something to shake us out of our patterns because none of us have ever experienced this before, experienced the uncertainty, experienced being sheltered in place with roommates, family, working from home all of this time. And I think the beautiful gift of challenge and adversity and change is that it shakes us out of our patterns. It's like we know we need to exercise, take our vitamins, eat our greens, but we don't do it until something jolts us. And that's what I found. It's increased the anxiety and the tension with people. And for some others, it's provided some more space and time and, dare I say, boredom to say, all right, what is it that I really want to reexamine? What is it that really matters? I'm at this place of pain so bad that I want to make a change. And that to me is really the magic trigger moments.
Yeah, I completely agree. But what I see is that I see quite some people who are not there yet because they're numbing themselves. They just continue and numbing themselves. And sometimes it's worse. Yeah.
I hear you. I mean, that's probably, you're very familiar with it, being a leader, a female leader in the corporate world, having to be a certain way and numb yourself against the criticisms, the sexism, all of that. And I too have felt that for many, many ways. Sometimes the only way to get through some of these days, weeks, months, and projects is to numb yourself and go there. And I think part of it is that there comes a point where it's too much, where it's been too long. And I firmly believe that there isn't necessarily one trigger or change point. It's maybe a lot of inputs over time that start to break through the numbness. And it's the hardest when there's these little prickles and you're not sure yet.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. Indeed. But I'm really there is a big shift and people call it even the big resignation, because a lot of people are resigning from their jobs and are thinking about, this is not the life I want for the rest of my life. So I guess a lot of the customers you help are in this stage.
Some people are and some people aren't. I think everybody has gone through maybe a great reckoning with the pandemic. And one of my clients, who I talk about, was writing about in the book, she had been on this achievement treadmill, run her entire life. And it's a little bit of what you talked about. It's because you look around and you compare yourself to other people, especially in a place like Silicon Valley, where there are so many maybe instant millionaires, multimillionaires. You look and you compare, and you're surrounded by world-class people, and you're like, why can't I be like that person? Why didn't that person get this? And for her, there was a magical period right at the beginning of the pandemic where there was a feeling of, oh my gosh, everything is different. Everything is stopped. The whole world is on pause. So because of that, there's a little bit of space, a little bit of freedom from this comparison, because this world is in chaos. And for her, taking that space between, I don't remember if it was 3 or 6 or 7 months, was like, oh, there is more. There is more to do. There is more to think about. And for her, it made her realize that the particular job she was working at, which was a very prestigious job and company, she disagreed with the values and the culture of the leadership team. What the space the company was in She loved that. That was very mission and purpose driven, but not necessarily the values and philosophy of the leaders. So she ended up leaving jobs, taking what she had never done before, a lateral move. God forbid, you know, everybody wants the promotion, but she took a lateral move because it was another company where she believed in the product and what it did for its customers, but also the philosophy and culture of her boss and the other leaders, the two or three co-founders of the company. And to me, that's an example of taking the space to go inward, which is what people are doing with the Great Resignation. And that's one pathway. I know other people who have chosen to stay in their jobs because they can find something different in there. They can renegotiate it with their boss. I know others who have been thinking for years or decades of, when is the time to take a break? Okay, maybe now is it. And there's some luxury of some of these workers being in the tech industry to be able to say, I'm going to not work for 3 or 6 months and just stop and pause and reevaluate. What is it that I want to spend my time doing? So those are the three types of people that I've seen or helped. And, you know, in the last one, sometimes it's, I want to pursue a side gig, a side hustle, a passion, and see if I can make that work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But what you say is what I see is lacking the most in people. The faster the world is going, the less space people make for themselves. It's like they have the feeling they have to go as fast as the robots and the algorithms. Well, I believe let the algorithms do that. And we need to regularly slow down and make that space.
Yeah, yeah. One of my favorite quotes that I use all the time is by Mike Vance. He was a dean of creative thinking at Disney, responsible for a lot of the great innovative ideas there. And his quote is, slowing down is sometimes the best way to speed up. Mm-hmm. And I found it in design. It's all about there's going to be times where you have to go fast and prototype and do things, but there's also got to be a time where you slow down because you can't rush creativity. It's a process. It takes time. So many of us, how many times have we grinded and tried to solve that problem and, you know, been like, okay, I'm just going to stay up till 2 a.m. to 3 a.m. to finish that thing. But it's only when you pause and you go to sleep, maybe you wake up in the morning or you take a shower or you're out for a walk the next day where it's like, oh, there's a spark. There's a solution. This is how creativity works that I've seen from doing this in corporate for so many years. But we make the mistake of just thinking if we just work a little harder, if we grind a little more, if we make ourselves be that robot, that's the way to it. But the robots aren't creative. The algorithms aren't creative. It's us, the people that do that.
Yeah, exactly. And that's also what research shows, that our brain starts working, our creative brain starts working when our rational brain stops.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, but then how do you stop? How do you stop when you have so many demands?
Yeah. So one of the concepts I talk about is that if you imagine a balance beam, you know, a kid's seesaw, and on one side is the doing and on the other side is the being. Mm-hmm. Most of the people I work with, and probably most of the people you work with, it's really imbalanced. The doing is very, very heavy. You know, maybe you're 95% towards the doing. And what that is your meetings, your to-do lists, your goals, your OKRs, your milestones, your launches. That's what's valued in the corporate world, in the business world, and in most of the modern world. And part of it is making a little more space for the being. I think we all know this. When we leave jobs, we might think about these are the successful launches that we had. But more importantly, we might think of, oh, that was my boss who was so compassionate. We might think of, these were the coworkers who I'm still friends with. And together we got through this really, really tough client, this tough launch. And these are the things that in palliative care, towards the end of life, when people are asked, what is it that they wish they would have done differently, it's never doing more. It's more being. It's pausing for the relationships. It's pausing for that. And so that's really easy to say, right? It's so easy to say, but so hard to do. And the way that I do it for myself and tell my clients to do this is to follow the energy. Mm-hmm. If you look at a course of a day, what is it that lights you up and gets you joyful and energized and excited? And I ask people to look at what are the activities you're doing that gets you to do that? And who are the people around you? And what is the time of day? And that's a way to evaluate like energy along with this doing versus being, to be like, where might you make a tiny shift? If there is a particular meeting that drains you, maybe you can get rid of that and get rid of a little bit of the doing on your calendar. Maybe if there's people who light you up and you want to spend time with them, maybe spend more time with them. See if you can do projects with them. And that's getting to this energetic, joyful part, which some people think is a little woo-woo, but I know that's where creativity comes from my work. So yeah. It's following the energy and thinking about that balance of being versus doing. Do you think that's specific enough for your listeners or can you go a little deeper?
No, it's specific enough because maybe I can hire you as well, because that's everything I teach in the course. It's being, it's following your energy, it's managing your mindset, it's focusing. Yeah. And it's all these deeply ingrained habits that we in fact didn't learn in school. In school, like you said, we learned to be achievers, to always do everything that is expected, to not mm-hmm. stop before everything is finished. And and that makes us so unbalanced today. Because we are these achievers.
Yep. Yeah. I feel really blessed. My children are in school in San Francisco. And, you know, you think of San Francisco in California, maybe a little bit extreme on that side, but that's what they teach, you know, all from Carol Dweck's work around mindset.
Wow.
That is what they teach. You know, there is a sense of here's all the effort, here's what you do. And I have to say my daughters are sometimes my greatest teachers. You know, my youngest would leave notes around me when she was at home at remote school saying, take lunch. Time to take a break. Okay, you need to get out right now.
So. Yeah, wonderful, wonderful. And you also said that you are a surfer, very popular among the Americans. We don't surf a lot in Europe, maybe kite surfing, but not surfing. And you like to make an analogy between surfing and being a leader in fast time. So what is it?
So I might actually twist the analogy a little bit around the cult of achievement, in that there is one thing in my life that I do and gives me energy and lights me up. And at the same time, I'm terrible at it. And that is surfing. And many, many people have a vision of surfing, of being, this really powerful person up on their surfboard, carving around the waves and like maybe going with the flow of the waves. And really, that's not how surfing works. So if I am going out to paddle out for a 2-hour session, the amount of time that I am up and riding the wave is probably 5 seconds or less. So 5 seconds or less in a 2-hour session. And really the bulk of the time is paddling. So you're paddling, paddling, paddling to get yourself in the right place, to get yourself through the water, just always paddling, paddling, paddling. And you paddle for many waves and you miss many of them. And again, keep in mind, I'm not the best surfer, but using this analogy. And then the other period of time that you spend a lot of time doing is sitting. So if I take you there, you're sitting on a board in the middle of the ocean and you can hear the sounds of the waves and you're moving up and down and there's birds and there's sea life and there's all these around you. And there's a lot of sitting. And what you're doing when you're sitting is you're looking out at the horizon to see where is the next set coming in, because there's periods where there's waves, a set, and there's periods where there's calm. So you're sitting through the calm, waiting for the next set of waves to come in. And when it comes, you're going to paddle, paddle, paddle furiously to hope for that, you know, 5 second ride, or, you know, maybe 15 second ride if you're really, really lucky. And what I love about that as an analogy for leadership is that it's impossible to achieve the entire time. You know, even like the world-class athletes that you watch, like you watch the Olympics and surfing, they're not up and riding the whole time. It's not active the whole time. But everything is about putting in the effort to paddle and then having the patience to sit and wait. And I think that patience is the being. Mm-hmm. And having that whole being part to sit and wait and think and process. But then there's also the rep, putting in the repetition of the paddling. And then there's that brief, beautiful period on a wave, or you might fall, or you might do all these things. So I love that as a metaphor to be that leadership achievement is really complex. And so often we just focus on that glory, that day of launch, but it's really the whole process and the waiting and the patience and the trying and the failing and the falling and the repetition. And that's why I love using surfing as an analogy, because it's something that really works for me to balance out the being and the doing.
Yeah. And then you miss the wave and you try again, and then you try again. And then, mm-hmm. and at a certain point, it's not the 5 seconds in 2 hours, but 5 minutes or I just came back from Costa Rica and I watched a lot of surfers. I did not want to try, but I loved watching them and the patience they have. And that's when I realized, when you see the little movies here, you see them surfing on very big waves, but you only see the surf part. You don't see all the weight part and the going under the waves so that you're
absolutely.
Not, yeah. So yeah, and I like your analogy.
There's always another wave. That's the thing. There's always another wave, another rhythm. There's always another day, another project, another job. And it helps really think about that long view perspective, because we are so impatient. I'm impatient. You're impatient. I think high achievers, we want that thing now.
Exactly. So. Yeah. And success is really going from failure to failure until you really reach that point where, oh, now I'm there. Briefly. And then you
briefly.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I think there's something really interesting about that, because the other thing that I see with so many hyper overachievers is that once you are there at the success, you're like, okay, done. What's the next one? What's the next one? And you move the goalposts. So I think there's also something about just celebrating, relishing, just stopping and pausing for a moment and feeling the success. And that's, again, more of the being and the emotions. Yeah. And we don't do that. We're like, all right, done. Next thing, next problem.
Target. Next target.
Next target. Yeah. Yeah. So part of it is the awareness of patterns, which helps us match them more and be like, oh, okay, I need to pause. I need to try to celebrate. What are some rituals that I could put on to celebrate for myself, for my team?
Yeah. And now, knowing everything that you know today, if there is like one thing you would like to say to yourself going back when you were overwhelmed and anxious at Facebook, what would you like to say to yourself that might really resonate in that moment?
It's all going to be okay. Trust yourself and trust the process. It's all going to be okay. Yeah. I've learned a lot of that through using the design process, you know, because when you start something new, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if you're going to come up with that brilliant idea. But if you follow the process, divergence, convergence, the process of creativity, you'll get there and it will be okay. It's not to say the product launch is going to be successful, but it will be okay if you trust yourself and you trust the process.
And also, it is okay to go through rough time, because there is where you'll grow. I think people need to hear that more often, that it's okay to fail. It's okay to feel bad, because that's when, in that uncomfortable phase, that's where you will get the most out of it for the future.
No, it feels terrible, doesn't it? Like, I hate it. I'm sure you hate it. Nobody likes it. And it's through gritted teeth that you're like, all right, this is terrible. This is uncomfortable. I'm going to learn from this. I'm going to learn from this. I'm going to learn from this, and it's going to be okay.
Yeah. Okay. Wonderful. So where can people find you?
Yeah. So my website is tutitagerly.com, TUTTITAYGERLY.
Well, we'll put it in the show notes of the episode. Yeah.
And a lot of this stuff is in my book, these lessons and frameworks and tools. And you can go there at makespacetolead.com.
Okay. And people can buy it on your website or on Amazon.
Yes, exactly. On my website or on Amazon. And there's also a lot of free resources on my site. So if you don't want the commitment of reading a whole book, lots of little workbooks and little bits of blogs and readings and resources. So do what feels right for you.
Great. Well, thank you. It was really a nice conversation. Nice to see that more and more leaders are surfing that wave of following your energy into being instead of doing and slowing down. I think this is exactly what we need as human beings, but also the whole humanity and our planet needs it.
Absolutely. I think it's going to make us have better work, better products, better lives overall.
Yeah, great. Well, thank you, Tutti.
Thank you so much. This was a ton of fun.
Bye, Tutti.
Bye.
Bye. So guys, remember, whatever you feel, tell yourself, it's all gonna be okay. Trust yourself and trust the process. And if you'd like some guidance, read Tutti's book on Make Space to Lead. So thank you for listening to this podcast episode. I loved the conversation. I love talking about surfing also and the analogy. And I hope you got something out of it and that it gave you the courage to go and lead the life you're supposed to lead and not the life that others expect from you. Yeah, you finished another episode of Rebel Leader with a Heart. If you want more, go to rebelleaderwithaheart.com for show notes and past episodes. If you love the show, subscribe, leave a review, and share it with a friend. The more, the merrier. Thanks for tuning in and have a great week, you rebel leader with a heart. Hello there. How adapted are you to the fast and busy times? Before diving into this subject, let me ask you a question. Do you see yourself working like this until you retire? If yes, congrats, you probably find a way to thrive in today's fast and busy times. But if your answer is no, don't worry, because this 5-minute quiz on how adapted are you to the fast and busy times might help you. Because if you're still working with the slower time habits and mindset, you might end up working really hard for too little impact. This quiz will show you how adapted you are to today's crazy fast times, and it'll give you your score on the 5 principles you need to master to better navigate your heavy workload while still having a life. So go to keyleader.com/fasttimes to start the quiz. Maybe it's time to kickstart your slower and more impactful life. keyleader.com/fasttimes, qileader.com/fasttimes. Now let's dive into today's podcast episode.